Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it, Hail Varsity Radio, Wednesday edition, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel is in studio today, getting ready for Northern Illinois and Nebraska on Saturday. You can join us, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. It was the offense taking to the cameras and microphones today. What's the word on that Big Red offense? Are there going to be four quarters of offense on Saturday? We'll discuss that. Can join us via email and do so, Chris at HaleVarsity.com. And give us a follow on Twitter, Chris Schmidt. That's me. And can follow me, Schmidt_radio. Elijah Herbel. Give Elijah a follow at Herbel Essences. Elijah is our resident offensive lineman. Was the pride of Lincoln Southeast for many years. And we'll talk about some of that offensive line play moving forward. We'll get Elijah's take on that. We'll run down our dear friend Mike Babcock of Hail Varsity Magazine.com. Talk some Big Red football with Babbers. It is a Wednesday, which means Mike Shuart is in from Wilderness Ridge Golf. Shuey will be on the phone because it's sunny and muggy, which means it is... he's doing that whole it's all in the hips thing like Chubbs did in Happy Gilmore. We'll ask him, is it all in the hips? We'll ask him that and get his, he's counted to 10 several times since Colorado, reaction. Because we're talking football. Shuey loves football. Shuey knows football. Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider in an hour. Rick Pizzo, it's good to get caught up with Mr. Rick. Big Ten buffet time. And a jock doc on one Tariq Hill you don't want to miss. 466-3776. Elijah, what do you know?
Well, just update on life. Last night I was playing some pickup basketball down on campus with some friends. And it was just a physical game all around, as it tends to go with me and my friends. And I chipped a tooth.
Okay.
Yeah, and the only problem is...
Smile.
It's not very noticeable, which is the big problem.
Where'd you chip it, dude?
It's the front tooth, and you can't even see it from there, I guarantee.
No, I've got a little bit of a sawed-off going on just from bad choices with what products I put in my mouth. All right.
Well, the only problem is that, like, you can barely even notice it, so it doesn't even look cool. So what's the point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife has the worst teeth in America. She had braces three times.
Uh-huh.
Right? And she still hates on my teeth because... I don't know. She's not very kind. You know what? This game Saturday could drive you nuts because Nebraska fans are wanting... They want revenge. They want pain. They want anguish. They want anger. They want, you know, unleash the fury. One of my favorite old school movies is... And I call it old school because I age. But Road Trip was a flick like 20 years ago. Tom Green had some short dude with good hair... the blonde gal, anywho, point is you had Barry was the character, and that was Tom Green's character. Tom Green once made Little Red feel very uncomfortable in front of thousands at Memorial Stadium one night. But you have Tom Green stringing a guitar, just one chord, asking for Mitch the Python to release the fury. It's hilarious. He's like there 3 days, doesn't move, wants to see the python eat the mouse. And eventually the python gets out, attacks him, and there you go. Point to this whole rambling is Nebraska needs to go smoke somebody. And you felt all right about it against Colorado in the first half. No show third quarter. You were sluggish and not really well put together in the third quarter or in the first game. Against South Alabama. And here's the reality. Like, Nebraska fans, those who have stopped smoking may start again because this is the third year in a row you've got a group of five squad rolling in that's good to better than advertised. Mm-hmm. You had Northern Illinois do it 2 years ago. You had Troy do it last year on the heels of a loss.
Yeah.
In Northern Illinois, they're MAC. They're good. They're eight-win program. And their coach, we had a little bit of sound from Coach Hammack yesterday. That guy doesn't mess around. He plays good football. He plays tough football. And their defense is big time. And the term used today by Troy Walters is disruptive. It's a good and a bad thing. As bad as Nebraska was at communicating on the right side of the line with what Colorado is doing with some delayed blitzes and some twists, right, where you have the defensive end and the defensive tackle loop and twist. You're playing I got him, you take him, right? If you're playing man defense,
yeah.
Turnabout's fair play for those big guys on the defensive line. How many times do you see teams get killed by crossing routes where the linebackers run into each other?
Yeah, it's a pick play where the offense isn't committing offensive pass interference.
Because it's just a normal
route
concept,
yeah.
Right? Well, this is the I see your BS and I raise you. Let's get even defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not communicating,
it's tough to pass those guys off.
Well, it is, and you hope you're right. I mean, you're kind of blindly doing it. Okay, I see somebody coming. There's another guy that passes in front of my face. You better get him left tackle as I'm the right guard, and I'm just speaking out loud here. You hope it's there. And I mean, Adrian got rocked a couple of times, a total of six sacks. We'll hear from Greg Austin here. First, Coach Walters, and then Elijah, you jump in here as you've played offensive line in Class A. Here is Walters about the disruption with Northern Illinois, and that's very real against an offense that we got to be honest, where's their confidence at?
It's kind of feast or famine. They're going to make some plays in the backfield. We've got to try to eliminate the bad plays, the negative yardage plays, but they play hard. You know, and it's probably a good opponent to play. You know, after a tough loss like we had, you pop on their film, put on their tape, and they catch your eye. They catch your attention. They're flying around. They're going to stack the box, put seven, eight guys in the box, close to the line of scrimmage. They play hard. You know, they came here a couple years ago and beat Nebraska, so we're not taking them lightly, and we've had a great week of preparation, but we've got to understand that type of defense, they're going to make some plays. There's going to be some negative yardage at times, but there are also going to be some big plays if we execute and we're detail-oriented and we play fast, there'll be some big plays as well. So we've got to be dialed in up front. We've got to be dialed into their movements and just play hard and play fast. And if you play hard, all their slant and everything they do, it'll take care of that if we're playing hard and playing fast.
Agreed. And play hard, play fast. And when you're playing hard and you're playing fast, you're playing confident and you're not wondering. And, you know, you look at the Utah stat line and box score here. You had a bad second quarter by Northern Illinois, outscored 21-10. There's your halftime score is 21-17. And then you go donuts for Northern Illinois in the second half, no score in the third or fourth quarter against Utah. Utah's really good. They're really physical. They're tough. It's not a place to go play and win, typically. You don't go win at Utah with Winningham. And, you know, Utah, and I should say Northern Illinois didn't get any sacks, okay? They didn't do much from a pressure standpoint against the Utes. The Utes are pretty veteran this year. That doesn't say Nebraska is not.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be key to me. I mean, can Nebraska lock in, be focused? You've got two games of film here on Northern Illinois. And I don't have faith Nebraska can just line up and pound at somebody in the run game.
Not at all.
They're going to need to, like, not abandon it. They need to keep getting better at it. But Nebraska's going to need, like, their full arsenal ready here to win. And the line is very fair between 14 and 16. And it all comes down to me about Nebraska handling pressure and movement. We'll hear from Greg Austin on that. But that's what it is. Nebraska should handle this game. It's the old adage, does one game beat you twice? And where's Nebraska at from a confidence standpoint? Anger, yeah. Are they angry and disappointed still? Can they be that way or can they play that way? It was a really good question posed in the Hale Varsity mailbag. We'll get into that with Mike Babcock. But Elijah, jump in here about offensive line play and how exotic did it get for you in high school with some of the other Class A teams you saw with blitzes? What you see on Friday night under the lights, is it something that's as exotic as what a Northern Illinois is going to run?
At times, it can be.
I mean, football's football is what I'm saying.
Football's football, but it just comes down to the speed at which these guys in college are doing it at. And this Northern Illinois defense is a fast defense. They're going to be, when they're bringing blitzers, those blitzers are going to be coming quick. The twists are going to be quick. All the stunts, I guess, in the defense line are going to be quick. And it comes down to trusting yourself and trusting that guy next to you. And that's what I worry about with this offensive line, is through fall camp, there's been so much jumbling around, mixing and matching, figuring out the right offensive line, that I don't think this offensive line has had much time to become cohesive as a group. And that's why I'm expecting to see week by week by week improvement.
And you don't have a lot of shifting and shuffling. You know that in week one you had kind of a 50-50 split at center.
Yeah.
You know who your tackles are. There's not really been a lot of shifting at guard, to my knowledge.
Not since game one.
Right. So let's spend a little bit more time from Troy Walters here, just kind of calling it like he sees it, and what has, in your opinion, the quarterback play been like, and this is the offensive coordinator, on what's happening behind center.
In terms of the run, we've got to get the whole run game going, inside, outside, everything. Overall, we've just been average. I think you talk to Coach Austin, talk to the offensive line, they would say they've been just average in terms of just moving guys, creating lanes. The first game, we didn't rush the ball very well. So our standards are high, and we've got a great offensive line. They understand that. Coach Austin's a great coach, and those guys understand that they've got to continue to get better. But we have to continue to get better across the board.
So that was, you know, this is your quarterback. That's his best friend is the run game. And he's been the best back they've had running the football. So run game's been average, outside, inside. The O-line's been average. That's being kind. And we knew it was going to be a work in progress, but the patience level that Nebraska fans have right now, based on the hype and the results, they're two different things. It'll get there, I think. It's just how soon does it get there? More from Walters here on what else has been average this season.
Receivers have been average. Quarterback's been average. Running back, we've just been average on offense. And we've got to be better. And we practiced that way this week. One of the positives out of the Colorado game, we got better from week one to week two. And so now if we can take the next step this week, then we'll be pleased as a coaching staff.
They are getting better. They looked better against Colorado. Do you have four quarters of better, right, against Northern Illinois, who's going to come in ready, not intimidated? Some of those cats are going to be confident because they won here 2 years ago. Let's talk Super Mario Verduzco and his reaction, his thoughts on Adrian, how he played on Saturday out in Boulder.
He did a pretty good job. Yeah, he played pretty well, except for turnovers, obviously. That guy put his helmet right on the ball. Those are going to have just a one happen. But we were talking about the fact that, God, in my career, I think our quarterbacks, I've experienced maybe a handful of fumbles. So ask him if he had butter fingers. We got to get it correct.
That's Super Mario. Hey, cat, how are you? You have butter fingers? I can see we got to do it with like an unlit cigar in the side of his mouth. More from Mario here in reference to Adrian's. Hold on a minute. In specifics to Adrian's running attack, and
this is good stuff.
Yeah, does he like what he's seen from Adrian running the football?
He's a freaking Nebraska quarterback, right? And that's what we want him to be like. You know, he should be a version of number 7, Coach Frost, really. That's what we want. We want that. And we're encouraging him to be maybe a little bit more dynamic with that.
I like hearing that. Mm-hmm. And I like the hell that the threat of the mobility and the mobility caused a Colorado defense in the first half, specifically that response touchdown on the quarterback draw where they powered in up the middle. And then the second touchdown Nebraska scored as Adrian rolled and then reversed field and had a little wall set up to squeeze in for that second touchdown. You don't want him getting hurt. He specifically put on weight to take hits. He ran the ball 19 times against Colorado. He's going to need to be doing that until you get more from the line until you get more from Mills. I think Moe's been fine. You need a complimentary back somewhere along with Washington. Maybe Ramir Johnson, the way Coach Held talked today. Ramir's getting close for takeoff. I don't know that he's your air quote power back, but I'd like to see what he can do between the tackles. Mm-hmm. If your O-line's still a work in progress and gelling, Elijah, a back can make that a much better looking offensive line. Mm-hmm. You didn't have quite the offensive line you had after the Searles and Qualley and Spencer Long class, okay? But you still had Amir in 2014.
Oh yeah. Well, this offensive run game is so much more zone based, where it's just you got a hat on offense and you let the running back pick the hole. Mm-hmm. It makes it easier on the offensive line.
Running back's gonna be able to find and see the hole.
Yes, that's what it comes down to. It's less on the line with this run game inside and more on the running back being able to find that hole, hit the hole, make a move, and get his 6-7 yards.
We'll get caught up with Mike Babcock in just a moment. A reminder to buckle up. The Department of Highway Safety lets you know that seatbelts prevent excessive injury when your vehicle and body need to slow down, whether you're in the driver's seat, passenger seat, or back seat. Buckle up now. Click it or ticket. A message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, and it's Mr. Mike Babcock next on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Reminder, we're at the Graduate Hotel. Every home football Friday, 4 to 6. Your chance to qualify. ESPNLincoln.com. Get signed up as part of the Long Drive competition. We'll get folks qualified here before hour one is done. We say hi to Mike Babcock, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, at MD Babs on Twitter. Babbers, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, Smitty. I once drove from Lincoln to State College, Pennsylvania. Is that counting that long drive? Or you're talking about golf,
I'm
right?
Talking about golf with
okay,
the you have the top golf simulators in the Graduate. Babbers, you're going to dust off your driver, whether you like it or not, Friday, and you're going to come kind of set the tone for us on a road show Friday at the Graduate, 9th and P. And, yeah, you having to drive to Siberia, the middle of nowhere, in State College, bless your soul for that one. I want to start off with a question for you, and we, you know, you're a historian, you're an author, you're a Hall of Famer, Babbers, and you've seen a ton of Nebraska football games. It is 9/11, and I want you to tell me what you remember about Nebraska playing Rice right after 9/11. I ask that because it was a Thursday night game that was moved from Saturday because of the terrorist attacks. Just the weekend before, Nebraska had a national audience against Notre Dame. And I remember interning with my wife for ABC, and, you know, it was Nebraska, it was Notre Dame, it was the game. And Solich and company beat up on the Fighting Irish pretty bad that day, and then the world changed on a Tuesday. What do you remember about Nebraska-Rice the following week once games resumed?
Well, you know, it's kind of a blur. I remember they did something with a flag, they created it or something at on the field. I mean, it was a nice tribute, but you know, I don't think that people really got over what happened. And you know, a lot of times you'll say, well, you know, football, that's a stabilizing thing. You know, it brings people back together. But I think that the enormity of that 9/11 was just so great that. I really don't remember much about it except that Nebraska played Rice, and you know, that was a nice run, but that was kind of the season in general that was kind of the precipice that Nebraska fell off of after that. Things kind of fell apart there, but yeah, you know, the Rice game, and then the other game I remember in that context was after John F. Kennedy was assassinated, and Nebraska was supposed to play Oklahoma on that Saturday, and a lot of games were canceled. But that game was played. And to some people's surprise, I think, but, you know, there was a case of where the Orange Bowl said, hey, we need to have a team, and identified, and TV was involved to some degree there. Mm-hmm. But, the Rice thing, gosh, that's, you know, that time is still something. I was just watching some things on TV today recounting that thing, and it just brings those feelings back.
Mike Babcock's with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Babber is going to switch gears to Saturday out in Boulder. And, you know, what were your takeaways? What were your takeaways with the Nebraska showing? What were your takeaways with the overtime defeat?
You know, I was surprised because of the way Nebraska started, but also because of the way, you know, the response, the Washington touchdown, the response to Colorado there, I thought, well, that, you know, that shows that this thing is going to go Nebraska's way still. You know, they're gonna have it. But in retrospect, as I look at it, you know, you have to take into consideration it's still, and it sounds like I'm making excuses, but this is the 14th game that Scott Frost and staff have coached here. That's one thing to consider. I mean, it's not easy to do what they're trying to do. Change a culture, change a system, do all these things. And, you know, you can say that you're going to be tough-minded, and you can say, you know, things are not going to fall apart on you when Colorado makes some adjustments and does a really nice job. I think you have to credit Colorado in that second half for some adjustments and just the way it played. And then, you know, I've always felt, although some people dismissed it, but I think the altitude does make a bit of a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And when your defense is on the field a lot, that makes a difference. So you combine those things. And again, not making excuses, but two games into this season and 12 last season, that, you know, it's still a work in progress. And, you know, I didn't feel like going into the season that one, you know, South Alabama was going to tell the tale of what was going to happen, or two games were going to tell the tale. We're going to have Northern Illinois and Illinois, and then, you know, you got the big test against Ohio State. But it's too early to make assessment and to say, you know, that this is where things are headed because of what happened at Colorado. I think Nebraska should have won that game. Again, credit Colorado and look at some of the factors that were involved in that second half.
Mike Babcock's with us, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. You're right about the big picture, and you're still young into the tenure, and it's not – you can't fast forward. you can't skip forward. Or skip a song, so to speak.
No.
Things take some time. That said, with the offensive line, Mike, the run game, the interior run game's trying to get better. The pass protection's working on getting better, and you have new pieces on that O line. You have new pieces of guys you're trying to lean on offensively at the skill spots. And Mike, there's a difference now than 20, 25 years ago, isn't there, with when it comes to seasoning kids? I mean, you've got a couple of guys in Farniok and Hymas that have played a lot of ball. You've got some new pups on the inside that are playing very, very young. That's not how it's always been, has it, in Lincoln with offensive linemen when they get their opportunity. I mean, it's taken years of watering, typically.
Oh, yeah, and you know, one thing, Smitty, you'll go back, and now I'm looking at the Tom Osborne era, you know, certainly at one point when Nebraska had a freshman team, a freshman junior varsity team, that was the system was typically you would play on that team, then you would redshirt, and then you would start competing for a job, and you've had all those reps on the freshman team because they ran the same system. You had those reps as a red shirt because you weren't always playing on the scout squad. You were going again. They had multiple stations running in practice. And so those kids, particularly the offensive linemen, because you don't see very many true freshman offensive linemen that lettered until recently. You're seeing more guys pushed into that. But, that was the thing, is that Nebraska had mature offensive linemen, so that by the time that guy was a junior, he was playing against young guys at other schools, but he had the experience of all those 3 years' worth of repetition in a system that was very set, and he was comfortable in it. And now you're in Nebraska's offensive line. You're right, Smitty. You can't just say, well, you've got a guy playing center who was recruited as a tight end and has moved into center. He's a great athlete. We know that. You've got a guy next to him at guard who walked on, who hasn't played a whole lot. And so you don't just say, well, Cam Jurgens has great ability. Give him one game and then he's going to be fine. It's going to take time for those guys. And, that's the thing that gets frustrating for people, I think. But again, I say this probably every time, it all starts up front on offense. And you've got young guys there that are trying their best. But they're learning, and it's going to take some time. Patience is not something that people have. I understand that. Passionate fan base, passion doesn't necessarily equal patience, but that's part of it. And you see it across the board in other areas as well. But I think they need to get more wide receivers involved. I think they have the talent. It's kind of surprising to me that they haven't. But again, it's a work in progress.
Mike Babcock's with us, Hail Varsity Magazine, hailvarsity.com. Babbers, about a minute and a half here. What do you expect Saturday? Northern Illinois is someone you don't want to mess around with.
No. And I think they have Nebraska's attention. Everybody's talking about 2017 and what happened there, right? What, two interceptions for touchdowns in the first quarter, and 21-17 ends up. But I think that they're focused. Guys were talking early in the week about how Monday's practice was as good a Monday practice as they've had. I think they're focused. I think they've, as best they can, I think they've set that Colorado thing aside. It's easy to say set the stuff aside, but it's not easy to do. And that loss stung, obviously. But again, you got to move forward, and I think they will. But I think it'll be a good test. Heck, even Illinois on the road is no, as where Illinois has been, still it's going to be a test. And that's the thing. We'll know more as we go. I always dealt with a high school coach back in Champaign, Illinois, when I was covering a high school beat there. And, I'd always ask him going into a game, I'd write my advance, and he'd say, wait till we play the game, then you'll know and I'll know. that was the standard.
That's what it is, man. It's game by game, isn't
yes,
it?
Exactly. That's the point. And he was a Hall of Fame coach in Illinois. I mean, he was very successful.
Babbers, we'll see you on Saturday, bud. Good stuff today. Thanks for a few minutes with us.
Hey, great talking to you, Smitty.
All right, there he is, Mike Babcock, Hail Varsity Magazine, hailvarsity.com. The new issue of Hail Varsity Magazine is going to be the food issue. We talked to Dr. Petey. He was on his way to North, we'll just say, to get an accurate grocery bill for a family of offensive linemen. So I can't wait for the food issue to come out with Hail Varsity. You can log on now, hailvarsity.com/subscribe. Get the magazine, get the premium content, $2.99. Boom. That's what it's going to run you a month. That is a bargain. That is a deal. That is a steal. We'll talk with Shuey. Mike Shuhart is done screaming at his TV after what happened in Boulder. Brad Edwards coming up, Rick Pizzo. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back to you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Apparently, Elijah Herbel is a Living Color fan. Good guitar riff right there.
This is a Guitar Hero.
I know it was. Right, but have you seen the video?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good work. Good work. I like it. I don't know, Shuey, did you have long hair, and did you like heavy metal back in the day?
Oh, yeah. I had the nicest mullet you've ever seen.
Well, you know, the mullets got shaved this week at Memorial Stadium, my friend.
I heard that. Saw that.
Yeah, you could only feed and water the mullet so long as you were undefeated.
That's right.
That didn't happen. Give us a good news / happy moment first before we get to the Buffs and Saturday and this Saturday. But, my man, what's going on with wilderness and golf, fall golf? I mean, it doesn't feel like fall now. It's still hot and sticky, but it'll cool down pretty soon. What's shaking out at wilderness right now with you?
It still feels like summer. We're actually a little slow right now. We're just going through our aerification, so they're just finishing up with that. So they should be done tomorrow and get back reopened. But Friday, we're doing a Titleist Fit Day. So all the new Titleist stuff that has come out, the TS drivers and the new irons. So 3 to 6, we're going to do a little demo day to have people come out if they want and look at the new Titleist product. It's sweet. It's really good. Really, really good.
I love that. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge, Hail Varsity Radio. It's Wednesday. That means it's a Shoey Wednesday. Okay. I know you work and you teach and you coach. Where? How much Colorado did you get to see?
I watched the whole thing.
When did you lose your voice?
I never really did. I was just, you know, they looked really good that first quarter. And I'm like going, wow, that's nice. I mean, they just look sharp.
Sure.
But then I could just tell that was going to be a tough game because they let Colorado hang in there long enough to let them get a little confidence and momentum, and they never could stop that, you know? And they just ended up taking it at the end, you know? But you could just see the momentum building in their favor the whole second half. And it's like, oh, no, this is going to be one of those games.
Shoey is a competitor, and I know you're competing against the course, but you've been on tour where you're competing well. You're not playing bad. Maybe you're not scoring like you should. But somebody either in your group or a hole in front of you or a hole behind you gets hot. And I think about momentum when you hear that Tiger roar, right? When you hear when you hear the crowd go off and Tiger's making a move or Tiger was lengthening his lead. And as a competitor, as a pro, what were your mechanisms to try and stop someone else's momentum, to get your game right, or to create some momentum? Because that's what Saturday was about. Colorado got hot. Nebraska didn't kind of rekindle their fire. And you had plays made by the Buffs, some answers by Nebraska. Nebraska had a couple of big-time touchdowns that should have killed momentum, but Colorado didn't let it happen. And Mo was wearing black and gold at the end of the day on Saturday. How do you stave that off as a golfer / competitor?
Well, what you try to do is you try to do what it is that you do, which is you're going to hit a really quality shot in this moment, in this moment, in this moment, you know? So it's like sometimes that competitor that's getting really hot helps you because it's like you need to match what he's doing. So you got to trust in what yourself. You got to have your belief in what it is that you're doing, and you have the will that you know that you're going to hit that shot, and you do. You know, to me, when I look at it, that's what they're missing, is that there's a difference between having a will to win and a hope to win. Mm. See, they have a hope to win, they don't have a will to win, and they don't have a guy that steps up and wills them to win and brings everybody else along. You don't have an Amir who single-handedly won a game for them. Who is that guy? Nobody has stepped forward to do that. You know, Martinez was supposed to do that, but he's not playing very well right now. And you don't have anybody else on your team that it can step up and carry everybody else along with them. They talk a good game and they want to win and they believe that. But there's a truly difference between, do you know that I'm going to step up and I'm going to hit a really good shot, or I hope to step up and hit a really good shot? There's a big difference, and they haven't had enough success for them to believe that. you know. So they got to have somebody help them along the way that actually steps up and makes plays to win games. But they haven't. They have guys that step up to not make plays to lose games. You know, I look at Wynn Robinson. You know, that guy probably hasn't dropped a pass like that ever.
I know.
But in a crucial time, it's like, what happened? You can't catch anymore?
It's the moment, man. Moment gets to you.
It does. The moment. You have to have the will that says, you know what, I'm catching this thing and taking it to the house, period. You know, and then you drop it. So how does that affect you? How does that keep affecting you? And it seems that they have a lot of situations where they just they make a penalty or they drop a pass or they do something that can get them in the right direction momentum-wise, but they always kill themselves by that. And it makes no sense to me.
So is that coaching or experience?
That's the player. That has nothing to do with the coaches. That's the players having to step up and believe enough in themselves and go, you know what, I'm not losing this game. So, I mean, I can speak from a personal experience with this. Mm-hmm. I won the Tour Championship back in, whatever, 90-something, and I made double bogey on the 17th hole, leading the tournament the whole way. And I made double bogey on the 7th hole, not hitting a bad shot. So my wife was caddying for me at the time, and I stood on the 18th tee, and I looked at her, and I said, there is no way in the world that I'm going to lose this tournament. I played too good all week. And I drilled it down the middle. I hit it 15 feet and knocked it in for birdie and won the tournament. So sometimes you just have to have a belief in yourself and a will that it's like, I'm going to make birdie and win this tournament, period. You know? And
Sure.
Here we go again, whatever.
The point is that they've got to, some of these guys need to see it to believe it, right? Versus just not blink and go out there and execute and have any doubt.
Exactly. And they need somebody to step up and do that. So we just haven't had, like I said, we haven't had an Amir in a long time.
Yeah.
He's the last guy that just carried the team.
Him.
A Levante David.
Right.
He would make incredible tackles. Sue. I mean, who's the last player we've had like that that's carried a team that gets everybody else to get on board and believe with them? You need that one player to do that. And I really thought Martinez was going to do that this year, and he, in my opinion, he's regressed as opposed to gotten better. That doesn't mean he won't get better. Hopefully he'll learn from these things.
He can get there. It's just not as immediate. Mike Shewhart's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Shuey, go find and see him at Wilderness Ridge. Of course, they got that Fit Day going on Friday, 3 to 6. Shuey, awesome stuff, brother. Love talking football with you. And we'll get out and see you soon. Thanks for the time today.
Always love being on, so thanks for having me.
Be good, buddy. Take care. Mike Shewhart. Good stuff. Shuey, got to have that guy to will it. We'll wind down hour one. Brad Edwards coming up. Rick Pizzo's on the way. It's Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Good stuff from Mike Shewhart. We'll get Shuey posted. Good take on Nebraska football. Do you have that leader that'll take you along for the ride? Mike Babcock earlier this hour, Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, a jock doc coming up on Tariq Hill. What's the latest with him? So I want to go back to Guitar Hero for just a second before we get folks qualified for the longest drive competition. And that'll be out with our friends at the Graduate Hotel, 9th and P. We're there 4 to 6 every home football Friday. Come see us, food and drink specials. Can get qualified and signed up. ESPNLincoln.com is where you go to sign up online. But we'll take some over-the-air qualifiers coming up here in just a moment before we head to SportsCenter. Okay, what was the hardest song? We used to have Guitar Hero. I think Junior busted the guitar when he got frustrated, and there it was. And to be quite honest with you, with Guitar Hero, I remember getting it for Christmas. This is, what, 04, something like that. And it was fun. It was great.
Awesome game.
It was wonderful. And Guitar Hero was great, and I wanted to be so good at the Nirvana song or the Dinosaur Jr. tune, but I wasn't. And I could never get to be competent with the Rage Against the Machine song.
Let's see. I'm trying to think what Through the Fire and Flames is definitely the hardest song.
Yep.
I never finished that song ever.
Okay. But you seem regretful right now.
Yeah, because my guitar is broken now, and I've like moved out, and I've like reminisced back on.
Can't you go find it? Because that was PlayStation 2, right?
PlayStation 2, along with Xbox 360.
Okay. Right.
And yeah, my roommate's got a 360. He still has a Guitar Hero game. I still have a PlayStation 2, and I still have the Guitar Hero game, and neither of us have a guitar. So if anyone out there is listening,
you got to go get a guitar.
Yeah, I really need
like,
to.
Like, doesn't GameStop have that or something? Not to throw out advertising for people who don't advertise with us, but you know what I mean.
I've looked online for them just because.
What do they run now?
I mean, decently. I mean, $20 plus shipping, and then you don't trust. Well, it's an old guitar. Who knows if it's going to work at all?
Sure.
So if anyone out there is listening that has a guitar. Hit me up on Twitter.
Yeah, at Herbal Essences is Elijah's Twitter.
I'll pay top dollar. I'll buy it off you.
There we go. My brother still has some games he dusts off with Nintendo, which is we'll play Tecmo, old school Tecmo. Or back in the day, we had King Griffey Jr. Baseball Super Nintendo. That was good. That was a lot of fun.
My dad would sometimes bust out his old original Atari. Oh, and there were some fun, like just the original Pong games and all those.
Yeah, Pong was all right. No, there was some good stuff. I haven't played games. Junior's just always locked in on his computer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what he does. And
yeah, I've been too busy to get
into college. He's been 2K-ing it quite a bit.
2K is a good game.
I think he downloaded that. He shook mom down for money to do it.
My favorite game of all time to date is still NCAA Football 13, the last one they made.
I had NCAA Football 01 or 02 for PlayStation 2.
Was that the one with Crouch on the cover?
It was pre-Vic. Actually, it was post-Vic. I forget who it was. It didn't have Crouch.
But
it had Jamal Lord.
Jamal Lord, okay.
He wasn't on the cover. But Jamal Lord was my quarterback.
The 2002 game then?
Yeah, I was on passing downs. I would put my dear friend Garth Glissman in before he was my friend to throw the football. Okay, callers 1 through 4 right now qualify. You're signed up. You're in line for the longest drive competition. Callers 1 through 4. Be at the graduates on Friday at 4. The longest drive competition. Callers 1 through 4 now. 466-3776. 466-3776. The longest drive competition. Your chance at prizes. Callers 1 through 4 right now with Hail Varsity. 1 through 4 now.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, Tower 2. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. More chances for you to qualify for the longest drive at the Graduate Hotels Friday 4 to 6. Roadshow Friday. We are back from Boulder. And that was a long, long drive with the caravan of sad Nebraska fans. We welcome in ESPN College Football Insider Brad Edwards. Brad, how was your weekend? What do you know?
Well, mine was pretty good. I enjoyed a number of games. I had told you last week I expected that Nebraska game to be very competitive, and it didn't disappoint. And fortunately, the game that we were focusing most of our attention on nationally, we could say the same thing, that LSU-Texas game was also a really good one that came down to the final few minutes. So it was a good day overall, hoping that we'll get some unexpected excitement out of this weekend's slate, because on paper, there's not a game that really jumps out at you.
You're right. I mean, you have game day at Iowa, Iowa State, and you wonder about some teams. Want to kind of get back to Nebraska, Colorado, start there. We'll get to LSU, Texas in a second. But, you know, you've seen a lot of teams that have been hyped, right, at the preseason, and then they hit the old screen door. Through two games, what do you make in Nebraska? Are alarms going off with this football team for you? Or are you thinking, okay, maybe they'll just get better as the year goes on? How are you, I don't want to say grading, but how are you interpreting Nebraska through two games? Really good 2.5 quarters of ball, but not 4 quarters worth.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for the defense, the first 6 quarters were pretty good. The last two were a major problem. You know, I think the offense obviously looked better last week, but still not what people were expecting coming in. And so, yeah, I would say Nebraska's been a disappointment if you're just basing it on what your preseason expectations were. But it is early, and I know I've said this to you before when previous seasons have started poorly for Nebraska, is that we're not at a point right now where that program is expecting to make the playoffs. At least the rational fans aren't expecting to make the playoff. So the non-conference schedule shouldn't really mean that much. I mean, sure, yeah, if you want to, you know, go to a New Year's Six bowl game or something like that, then you do help yourself by winning all your non-conference games. But I think more than anything, it's about just making improvements and putting yourself in a position where you can win the Big Ten West. And I think that's kind of where the goals need to start for this year. And, I mean, that's still all in front of them. But they do have to get more consistent. I think we've seen, you know, we saw enough from the offense last year that I'm still not worried about this being like a season-long type thing. And we've seen some positives from the defense to show that they've got a chance to be a lot better than they were a year ago. So if you're looking for positives, I think you can find them.
Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio, ESPN Insider, College Game Day. Brad, when you look at programs across the country, and it's different. I mean, you've got Bama, you've got Clemson, and Oklahoma's been really good, and Ohio State, right? But outside of those guys, it's been, you know, few and far between. Maybe a Notre Dame sneaks up, right? Or maybe University of Washington, and I'm thinking about the playoff era. But in your eyes, because it's a line of scrimmage ball game, let's talk offensive line. What program out there, in your opinion, does the best job of getting, A, either super high-quality linemen that can be more college-ready, or B, gets guys developed and gelled quicker? That's kind of the magic question I have, because that's where Nebraska wants to get better. It's going to be because of their offensive line. Who in your mind sticks out? What programs are really, really good, well, either because of talent or coaching on that line?
I mean, the one that's been the most consistent is Wisconsin.
Ah,
now,
good call.
I do think though that the game has changed, and it's still changing for some teams like LSU, but for the masses in college football that have kind of adapted to a style of play where they're more pass than run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you also have to recognize that when you do that, that pass protection becomes more important than run blocking. And as much as people want to associate, you know, good offensive line play with being able to go out there and just, you know, push the opponent 5 yards downfield after the snap, or, you know, or pancake someone or whatever it may be, that's great. And there's certainly plays where you need to be able to do that. But if you're a team that's going to throw the ball more than you're going to run it, then pass protection, especially if you have a talented quarterback and playmaking receivers, that's the bigger deal. And so I think we kind of have to adjust the way we think about what makes a good offensive line. It's not necessarily what, you know, the types of plays that you might put on a highlight reel for offensive linemen. But the Patriots are a great example of this. Like, it really doesn't matter whether New England can run the ball or not year in and year out. If you can give Tom Brady 3 seconds to throw the ball most of the time he drops back, you're going to win almost every game. And I think we're kind of there in college football now. When you look at the best teams, they're almost always the ones that have the best quarterbacks. And so, you know, I don't know that we're far enough into this era where we can really identify, you know, who's the best at doing this. I think Georgia the last couple of years has had a really good offensive line. Oklahoma has. Oklahoma lost almost all their guys from last year. I think one returning starter. And so far, I don't see much of a drop-off, and it could be level of competition, but we'll find out soon. But I think that's the part that really sneaks up on people, though, is that they want to judge it by, okay, how well can you mash people? Depending on what style of offense you have, that's not necessarily the most important thing for an offensive line these days.
Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Brad, what did LSU show you? Did Joe Burrow surpass expectations or meet them in Austin on Saturday?
Yeah, I would say he surpassed them. And I've been a big Joe Burrow guy. I mean, I picked LSU to make the playoff before the season. I thought they'd go 11-1, losing in Tuscaloosa, but winning everything else. And Joe Burrow was the reason I gave for that. I just felt like, you know, they had a better quarterback than they've had in recent years. And, you know, that we know that they're good enough at every other position. And yet he still played better than I was expecting. And I think the big moment for me came with about 4 minutes to go, you know, LSU up 6 with the ball. And the question was, and Herb Street, you know, he asked the question right there on the broadcast. Okay, are they going to keep doing what they've been doing all game that Texas couldn't stop? Or are they going to get, you know, conventional here and run the ball, make Texas use their timeouts, and then punt back to them? And what they showed in that moment is that they're committed to this new offense. They're committed to throwing the ball, and that's the type of team they're going to be because that's what they did. They didn't run it. They threw it, and they ended up not only picking up the first down but converting a long touchdown play, and that basically iced the game. So they iced it with a touchdown instead of a first down. And that, you know, it's just something you're going to have to adjust to if you're in the SEC and you play LSU, is that this is a different style LSU team. There were some concerns for them defensively, but that's another story. We'll, you know, wait until they play a really good opponent before we have to go there again. But I was a little surprised that Sam Ehlinger, who had only one healthy running back, and he knew going into the game he was going to have to do everything for that offense, just running and throwing, and he did. Even it was a one-man show, and LSU knew it was going to be a one-man show, and they couldn't stop him. And so I would say a little bit of a concern right now for their defense, but LSU fans are thrilled with what their offense is doing.
Brad Edwards with us on Hail Varsity Radio. And Brad, the talk with that LSU-Texas game was on the two quarterbacks. Sam Ehlinger was a Heisman candidate coming into the year. Do you think that with that game, Joe Burrow may have played his way into Heisman candidacy? And if not, who do you think so far this year should be on the radar for the Heisman coming up in December?
Yeah, Burrow definitely is going to be on that radar now, more so than he was coming in. And, you know, some of the other guys are obvious. You know, Jalen Hurts, the way that he's played through two games, he's going to be right there in the conversation. And you knew that if he played well, he would be, given what the last two Oklahoma quarterbacks have done. But I think what's going to make this one interesting is that the preseason favorite was Trevor Lawrence. And in addition to him, their running back, Travis Etienne, was very highly regarded, and you figured he's going to have a huge year. Well, Clemson just cleared the biggest hurdle that was standing between itself and the playoff last weekend. That was Texas A&M. They are going to be a huge favorite in every game the rest of the way. I mean, I don't remember a season like this where you could look at a national title contender in week three and say, there's no one left who can even challenge them. But that's what I feel when I look at Clemson's schedule right now. And if we're right about this, and they're that much better than every team left on their schedule, those guys are going to have games where they don't even play in the second half, probably most of the time won't play in the fourth quarter. And so you wonder, are Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne going to have the type of stats where people are even going to consider them alongside guys with much bigger numbers who are also playing on, you know, big-time teams? So I wonder if the Clemson guys have as much of a chance Heisman-wise as we kind of have led everyone to believe they have. And the same thing is probably true for Tua. I think, you know, much like last year, you know, he's going to come out early in a lot of games. And so maybe the advantage is to, you know, some of these guys who are playing on teams that are going to be in more competitive games and because of it are going to be able to put up bigger numbers.
Brad Edwards, a couple more minutes with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Brad, I want to go to the Big Ten for a moment and get your take on Maryland. Coach Locksley's got some talented guys. They are very balanced. They run for a ton of yards. They throw for a ton of yards. They destroyed Syracuse, and I don't know if that was look-ahead time for the Orange because they got Clemson this weekend, or if Maryland's just better than we all thought. We didn't know how the coaching and the talent would mesh. Are the Terps for real in your eyes?
Yeah, I'm buying Maryland. I spent a lot of time on Radio Saturday talking about this during their game, and like I think Syracuse is a good defense.
Yes.
Not great, but I think they're good. They're better than average. And Maryland made them look clueless And look, we've known that Maryland has players. I mean, they've got skill guys. They have, you know, running backs. They have receivers. But what we haven't seen in recent years, and I think we kind of overlooked this with Maryland, is that it's been so long since they were healthy at quarterback for any extended period of time, especially with their starter, going into the season, that, you know, I think we've kind of undervalued how good the rest of their talent was offensively because of it. And, you know, now you see a guy who's only been in the, you know, in the program for now two games, who's lighting it up. And I think this Maryland offense is really good. And, you know, I look at their schedule, and, you know, they obviously play the other four, you know, top teams in the East with Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Michigan State. And I'll be surprised if they don't beat at least one of them. And I think they could get two of them, because I think their offense is that good. You're going to have to score a lot to beat them. You better bring your A game offensively when you play Maryland, because their offense is going to be tough to stop.
Brad, we'll let you get out of here on this. What game are you looking most forward to this weekend?
Yeah, that's a
good question.
That's a tricky one. Yeah,
all
you know,
of them.
You know, it's funny. Yeah, I mean, the Iowa State. I'm excited that game day's there, because I think that's one of the really underrated rivalries in the country. And I think part of that has to do with when the game is played. It, you know, it's right the week two, week three range every year, and most people aren't ready for a rivalry game. And other, you know, some teams are starting to get into conference play a little bit, and it just kind of falls through the cracks. So I'm glad they're there for both of those programs. You know, there's not a rank versus rank game, and so there's not anything that I really look at and I'm like, okay, this is one that's going to shake up the playoff chase. And look, Saturdays like this, a lot of the times you will get one or two upsets that you didn't see coming. And so, I mean, maybe that'll happen. But one game that I would say to watch out for, and this is kind of related to Nebraska, Air Force at Colorado this week. All right, so Colorado has essentially opened the season with two rivalry games. And I know they don't play Nebraska much anymore, but the way that they played last week and the energy in that stadium, it felt like it was still a big rivalry between teams that play all the time. And the first game was against Colorado State. And so, okay, here comes, you know, poor little undersized Air Force without all the athletes and, you know, all that, just like poor little Army last week going into Ann Arbor and all that. And so Air Force has a lot of upperclassmen on this team, a lot of returning starters. And they, you know, they're going to run an offense that Colorado's not used to seeing and all that stuff, because they don't play them every year. And so this is a dangerous spot. And this is a fun game, I think, for it wouldn't have the same impact nationally as if, you know, with Michigan getting knocked off by Army, if that had happened. But I'll throw that one out there. I'm looking forward to watching this game, because Colorado's got to come down off an emotional high and get ready for a team that's really difficult to play against because of their style. And there's a trap there. And Vegas knows it, by the way. I don't know if you look at those numbers.
That number is very, like very telling. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So something's up.
Oh, handle success after you've beaten both your rivals. Exactly. Here comes Air Force with the triple option. Good luck, Buffs, is where I'm at with that one. Brad, we'll talk next week, man. Thanks again. It was always fun to chat with you.
All right, Schmitty. Take care.
See you, bud. Take care. There he is, Brad Edwards. He's right. I mean, you want to talk either Vegas trap or falling in love with Colorado? You've had pats on the back all week after you finished all your gummies. I mean, here comes the cadets, man. Little play action. Brad Edwards, good stuff from him. It's Big Ten Buffet time. Rick Pizzo around the league next.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back in, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for Big Ten Buffet with Rick Pizzo of the Big Ten Network. Rick, we're already 2 weeks in. How are you?
It is unbelievable. It goes so fast when you're in it, and then you start to look back, and week one seems like a year and a half ago when you get to week 12. But for the players and for the coaches, now that Big Ten play has started, Rutgers and Iowa last week, and more conference games this week with Ohio State and Indiana, and there's no more preseason. There's some non-conference games left for teams. But I think at this point, you are starting to look like who you are.
And that is disconcerting for some Nebraska fans as they look at Nebraska. It was better, but still not what many were expecting. The team that led a lot of hype in the offseason, one of those it teams, has been Nebraska. The opener was not what they wanted. You had a good half against Colorado and a couple of drives in the second half. But, Rick, I know you were in West Lafayette doing coverage, but you've had a chance to check out a little bit of Colorado, Nebraska. What's your reaction?
I think, unfortunately, it's a little scary, and I understand why. I understand why there is some legitimate concern in Lincoln. The South Alabama game, I think, was forgivable. The offense was trying to find its way. Yes, most coaches' defenses are usually ahead of offenses week one, maybe even into week two. It's more read and react than it is really try to think about what you have to do and read defenses. I actually thought, and maybe I was in the minority here, that it was something of a good sign that the defense and special teams bailed out the offense in week one, because my thought was moving forward that the offense was clearly going to do its part. And I think that you could make the argument that if you score 30 on the road against a Power 5 opponent, you've done your job from a point production standpoint. I think the scary part of that loss is that after giving up less than 200 yards combined in the first three quarters, you allow almost 300 combined in the fourth quarter and overtime. That, to me, is cause for concern. Now, is that play calling and going soft too early? Is that a lack of confidence and belief that if you keep sending multiple players and you keep calling multiple blitzes that your back end can't hold up? I think if the answer is yes to either one of those, that's a little bit disconcerting. Yeah, to me, that's a game when you have that kind of lead and you have that kind of point production on the road, you cannot come home with an L in that game.
Can't do it. Can't lose to that team. Can't lose to that team that way when you had a 60-40, 70-30. Let's paint Folsom Field red. I took off after the third quarter to get set up for the postgame show, and, man, the fourth quarter was a nightmare for Nebraska fans I was around. Do you think the offense is off, and if so, why?
I don't necessarily know that it's off. Like I said, I think in week one that can be forgiven. And listen, Verduzco and Adrian Martinez were open and honest. They said they played like crap in week one. I mean, it was a matter of missing open guys. It was a matter of bad reads. Maybe that was a little bit of extra pressure and feeling the weight of the world that had been put on Adrian's shoulders and then Nebraska offense's shoulders over the course of the offseason. I don't necessarily think it's time to panic or even be nervous offensively. I really don't. It will get crisper. I really am more concerned that I saw the same things defensively in that fourth quarter that I saw in way too many games late last year, especially early in the season, and not just last year. We've seen this now for a couple of years. I knew the new regime came in last year, and so you try not to compare. But this is what killed Nebraska over the last couple of years and killed Husker fans, was even when you would build a lead, you couldn't hold a lead. And sometimes that comes back to creep back in the minds of players that have been around for a couple of years. You got to get that out of their mindsets as quickly and as completely as possible.
Offense got to be better and you know, put somebody away. Urgency has been a topic this week on both sides of the ball. The defense made a couple of plays but gave up a lot of points. You're right on, Rick. The offense needed to do their part one more time, you feel like, in the third quarter. But Nebraska ready to move on. Northern Illinois isn't screwing around. They're a pretty good club, Rick.
Yeah, they're one of those teams, too, that they never get the kind of respect that they probably deserve from non-football people. You know what I mean by that? Football people know what the MAC is. Football people know that this league is full of recruits who are right in the cusp of going Power 5 and maybe having to fight their way or being starters on the MAC team but get 2 or 3 years of unbelievable experience. And that's what you get on a lot of these teams, too. Northern Illinois is like that. You get a ton of experience. You get guys who are not nearly as intimidated by the opponent's jersey as you think they would be. And a lot of them are motivated because they are playing against the school that they really wanted to go to. So, yeah, this is always one of those tricky games, and there is always the danger – always the danger of looking ahead to a conference opener under the lights the next week at Illinois. So, yeah, the danger factor, especially after the pucker factor against Colorado, I mean, you start to pucker up, and it gets tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter until you actually seal the deal. So this is one of those games that I guarantee you will keep Scott Frost and his coaching staff awake pretty late at night this week.
Rick Pizzo's with us, Big Ten Buffet, Hail Varsity Radio. Rick, let's tour the Big Ten, and what do you make of Purdue? You saw them against Vandy. They want that Nevada game back. Here comes TCU and their speed off the edge.
Well, Elijah Sindelar, the Purdue quarterback, leads the nation in passing yardage. Trouble is, he put his head down and tried to gain two extra yards when Purdue didn't need it late in the game on Saturday, and he's now listed as questionable with concussion-like symptoms. If he can't go, they're going with a completely inexperienced quarterback. And Jeff Braun was open and honest with me when I was on the sidelines for that game against Vanderbilt. He said, right now, we really can't block in the run game. We can't block to set up the screen game. We just got to throw the ball downfield. You can do that with Elijah Sindelar. I'm not sure you can do that with a young guy who's never been in that situation before against the TCU team that you know is going to be extremely well coached. I give Purdue a ton of credit because they scheduled 11 Power 5 opponents, obviously 9 being in the league, 2 non-conference Power 5 opponents, and the 1 non-Power 5 non-conference game on the road against a really good Nevada team. So if Purdue comes out of this game and wins and they're 2-1 heading into conference play, man, feather in the cap of Jeff Brohm and the Boilermakers for playing that schedule and navigating that kind of non-con.
Buying or selling or holding on Maryland?
I'm buying. I am a big-time buyer on Maryland for a couple of reasons. Josh Jackson is the quarterback that they need. Josh Jackson is also a quarterback that fits like a glove in Mike Loxley's offensive system. He makes quick reads, he makes smart decisions, and he's getting the pub right now. But Anthony McFarland may be the most explosive player in the country, not the Big Ten. The running back from Maryland may be the most electrifying guy with a ball in his hands coming out of the backfield anywhere in the country, because every time he touches it, he is a threat to take it the route. I think that Maryland's schedule, obviously in the East, is difficult. But after what I saw them do to Syracuse, a top 25 Syracuse team who came in as maybe one of the teams that could knock off Clemson, maybe one of those teams that could scare you late in the year, they eviscerated that defense. 63 points and made it look easy, more than half coming in the first half. So I think it is absolutely time to buy into Maryland. If you can come anywhere near that kind of offense or production on a weekly basis, your defense only has to be marginally above average, and I think they can be that.
They are going to be a thorn in a lot of teams' sides when you look at the schedule. Nebraska's got them. Michigan's got them. The East. I mean, Maryland's playing some big-time football. What do you think of Iowa State this weekend?
You know, I wish I had more of a read on Iowa State because they played an FCS opponent in week one, nearly lost, right? Had to go to overtime to win that game, I believe it was Northern Iowa, and then they didn't play. So I had the chance to interview Kirk Ferentz actually on Thursday for the big show, and one of the questions I'm going to ask him is, how much of a disadvantage does that put you at as far as scouting this team? They have one game of film from this year against an FBS opponent. You, meanwhile, have not only played an opener, but then you went in conference play in week two. So they have conference game filming. You don't think that makes a difference? As coaches, it makes a big-time difference. And much like those MAC players who are fired up to play Power 5 opponents, every single one of those Iowa State players looks forward to this game every year. And historically, the Cyclones have given Iowa everything the Hawkeyes have handled. I see no reason to think that doesn't happen again this weekend.
Michigan, should there be panic, or is that just Army being Army?
I want to say it should be Army being Army because, you know, Army nearly did the same thing to Oklahoma a year ago. We know what Oklahoma had with your Heisman Trophy winner and Kyler Murray and a college football playoff caliber team. But I'm a little concerned because I add week two to what I saw in person against Middle Tennessee in week one. The offense wasn't multiple. It wasn't explosive. It didn't look a lot different. I thought that was growing pains. I thought that was a week one feeling out process. I think when things got tight against Army and Michigan just started running the ball over and over again, that maybe Josh Gattis, it doesn't have as much latitude as we thought he would have in the play call. And I don't know that for a fact. That's what it appeared to me watching the football game. And if that's the case, how different will Michigan be offensively? Now, Charbonnet went for 100 yards, but 33 carries to get there, right? So that tells me this offensive line is not pushing people around. And I know Army's tough, but, you know, all the defensive lines that Michigan are going to face are even tougher. They got to play Michigan State, maybe the best D-line in the country. So are you going to get a push? I don't think it's panic time, but I think there is legitimate cause for at least a little bit of concern.
Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet, Hail Varsity Radio at BTN. Rick Pizzo, catch him throughout the week on BTN. Last thought here, Rick, and it's always great to get caught up in two of the ten with you. Michigan State and Arizona State, this thing was one of those that got away from Sparty last year. Early win for Herm. Now you've got a running game that's revitalized with Sparty and a defense that's as good or better than last year. Big-time opportunity here for Sparty this weekend against Arizona State.
Yeah, I think this is payback time. I think this game comes at a perfect time for Michigan State. Not only is it at home, but you found a running back in Elijah Collins last week, an offensive line that opened up some holes. Sure, Arizona State's going to be bigger and stronger up front than Western Michigan was, but Michigan State now has confidence offensively, and they did in week two what Mark D'Antonio wanted when he shook up the staff offensively. Find a run game, let the run game set up the pass game, then go deep. I think that works perfectly against an Arizona State team that comes in and will try to be opportunistic defensively. I think you keep them on their heels with Collins, and then you allow the workie to work downfield, Stewart and Cody White throwing the football. I think this comes at a perfect time. I think this is payback time for Michigan State, and I do think the Spartans are able to beat Arizona State at home on Saturday.
Rick Pizzo, catch him the rest of the week on BTN, getting you ready for all the college football action, and then back in West Lafayette this weekend. Rick, thanks for a few minutes today.
My pleasure, as always, buddy. I'll give Gary Patterson and Jeff Braun your best this weekend.
Pizzo, you don't qualify for the longest drive, but you can right now at the Graduate Friday at 4. Longest drive, caller 5 right now, 466-3776, caller 5 now.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Back to you. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. A Jock Doc Wednesday. Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Doug Tavis with us. Dr. Doug, that fantasy football season's alive and well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I don't have much going with the fantasy football, but I'm personally doing okay. Thanks for asking.
Well, good, good. our fantasy squad's now in year 27.
Oh, man.
It's a great league with some buddies, and they're usually pretty cordial until you beat them or they savagely beat you, and that's what happened to my team and Junior's team. He's now the general manager.
I see.
One of our keepers was Tyreek Hill, and aside from his citizenship being questioned by us, we kept him. But week one, he got drilled by Jacksonville, and one of the most explosive players in the NFL is sidelined. Dr. Doug, give us a look-see into what's ailing one of the top players for Kansas City.
Yeah, so when you watch the films on this, you see him being landed on with both of his shoulders basically right squished between the ground and the opposing player. And as a result of that, the collarbone, the clavicle is the appropriate name for it, but the clavicle where it attaches onto the sternal bone got injured. And what happens is that when you drive those shoulders into the ground and you've got that opposing player landing on top of you, you literally can have that clavicle bone dislocate from the sternal bone or the breastbone, and it can actually go behind the bone, okay? So it's kind of like that bad finger dislocation, you know, a lot of us have seen where you just look at that and you go, oh, that ain't right. Okay, this bone is going back behind another bone and into the chest.
That is no good. Ouch. I mean, that sounds brutal, especially when you paint the picture of the notorious dislocated finger, a lot of times the middle finger pointing either up or down, right?
Yeah,
but that's
exactly.
that's the bone in his chest that he was clenching at with the pads over it, and man, that's got to hurt.
Yeah, the biggest thing that we get worried about is that immediately behind the chest bone, the breast bone there, there's a whole bunch of what we call jujus, big arteries and nerves and things that make a surgeon stay up at night worrying about things. And so when a dislocation like this happens, we really get worried about one of those structures being injured. And so if you have a situation where that bone is forcefully pushed behind the other bone and it runs into one of those big blood vessels, that can be a very, very serious situation. And that's the reason they took him right to the trauma hospital immediately.
Dr. Doug Tavis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Tariq Hill, his injury with Kansas City. And Dr. Doug, you mentioned that from a precautionary standpoint, it is absolutely potentially dangerous with all of the inner workings in that region of your body that could get pierced due to a break. And from a healing standpoint, what's next for Hill? Great, he's not in life-threatening danger, which could be the case with internal bleeding or some sort of puncture. But now moving forward, how do you heal up if you're Hill, and what's the timeline for that?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different things that can happen here. One is that there can be a fracture associated with it, so the bone can break away with part of that sternal bone and still slide behind that sternal bone. In those situations, there's really a strong likelihood that there will be bone-to-bone healing, and there won't be any long-term repercussions with that. So that's actually not a bad thing. That's a good thing if a little bit of the bone breaks away. In a situation where there is no bony injury, but the ligaments all tear, allowing for the clavicle bone to slide behind the breastbone, then you're in a situation where you've got to get it back into position. And once it's in position, then you have to allow for that soft tissue healing. So this is kind of one of those scenarios that sometimes you hear about, well, it'd be better to break it than to deal with ligament injury. You know, it's a bad injury no matter what, but it's harder to know when that soft tissue injury is really completely healed to allow him to go back out there and do the kind of stuff he does.
You know, when it comes to alerting yourself, what, are you MRIing it? Are you CAT scanning? How do you determine just how damaged the area is?
Yeah, these things are notoriously difficult to determine the problem and the severity of the problem. So when you're looking at a player, and we've had one of our Lincoln Stars hockey players have the same exact injury, when you're looking at a player like that, you can tell that there's some swelling there, but you really can't feel that bone being pushed back. And so you just got to have a really high level of suspicion. You go get plain x-rays. A lot of times those don't help you. And then you get a CT scan. And the CT scan is really the thing that helps you figure out the position of that collarbone. But basically, you try to get that bone back into position, and a lot of times that takes putting somebody under an anesthetic. Sometimes it'll pop out and come right back in, and you know it's been injured because there's bleeding around that area, bruising around that area, and swelling. But sometimes you don't have to bring it back into play, with manipulation. So then you let the thing heal up, and you worry that he's going to do it again. But that actually is pretty rare to have it happen again.
Dr. Doug Tavis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Tariq Hill, his injury, and just the severity of it. You mentioned the recurring injury, and, you know, that it's not likely. And from a soreness standpoint, is this something that once it gets healed, is there still going to be some soreness to it? With him going over the middle again.
When you land like he lands, you know, when he's come down from a pass, you know, a lot of sort of compression injury across those shoulders, and a lot of times for these wide receivers and anybody else who's getting tackled, I guess. But, you know, there's been some indication in NFL football players. There was a Rams player back, probably 8 or 10 years ago that had one that required a reduction. That person was back playing about 5 weeks later. There can be some pretty good outcomes. If you read the literature that's out there right now about Hill, you know, they don't know if he's 6 weeks, 8 weeks. Everybody's kind of guessing right at this point.
Dr. Doug Davis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. First injury of the NFL year that kind of hits home with a lot of Chiefs fans out there, and there's a few non-Chiefs fans out there, but Tariq Hill is a guy that keeps you up at night because you're a fan or because you need him neutralized. He's out for quite a while. Fantasy implications. Dr. Doug, we'll get caught up again very soon. Good insight, and thanks for the topic today.
You bet. Have a good weekend.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time. Good stuff today. Rick Pizzo with us. Also, how about Brad Edwards, Mike Babcock, Shuey, Elijah Herbal, Chris Schmidt, great to be with you on a Wednesday. Tomorrow, Bill Bender of the Sporting News, Parker Gabriel, going to check in. Mr. Brandon L. Vogel will be with us, and Blackshirt Husker NFLer Jay Moore. So loaded up for your Thursday. Friday, we're at the Graduate. We'll get one more qualifier for the long drive competition in a moment. Reminder about your friends at West Blue Realty. And if you're moving in 2019, think about West Blue Realty. They specialize in residential home sales in Lincoln and surrounding communities. They'll help make this move a smooth one. And for a limited time, you mentioned Hail Varsity. West Blue Realty will give you up to $1,000 upon the closing of your next home purchase. Call Tom Luby today at 402-540-3768 or Kelly Hofschneider. Kelly can take care of you at 402-202-2312. It pays to work with West Blue, westbluerealty.com, and go see him at 1120 K Street, Suite 200. Nick Saban answering a question today about his team's schedule. The SEC is the SEC, the non-conference. Well, there's a lot of crickets a lot of times. So, St. Nick fired back.
So we're playing the best teams that we can get to play us. Why don't you start calling around and see if you can get somebody else to play us, and we'll play them. We'll play anybody you can get to play us.
Okay, no one wants to play Alabama. No one wants to play Bama in Georgia or Houston or in the South. You know what? Make that phone call. I want to see, and Nebraska isn't ready for them. Nobody's ready for Bama except Clemson, maybe LSU this year. But how about Bama at Arrowhead?
He's blowing smoke there. He would never schedule Nebraska in a non-conference.
Sure he would.
Oh, no, he wouldn't.
Absolutely he would.
No, he doesn't want to risk it.
Bama can still lose two games a year and get into the playoff. Don't kid yourself.
Unless they're going to be making boatloads of money playing
that
game.
They will. Arrowhead's a high-capacity stadium, as is the Georgia Dome or the Mercedes-Benz Dome or the Superdome for these neutral site kick. Or Jerry World. He'll play Jerry World.
Well, the problem is why would he risk another non-conference loss when he can schedule four cakewalks, play two tough games in the SEC every single year, maybe three?
I'd believe that if he isn't the guy and the only guy in the SEC saying, look, give us a nine-game conference schedule. Because these Sanfords or whoever the hell they're playing before LSU or the bye week, isn't doing his team any good. Caller 5 right now, 466-3776, 466-3776. Caller 5, you get qualified as part of the long drive competition. Gets rolling at 4 at the Graduate. We're down there at 4 on Friday, Roadshow, Home Football Friday. So caller 5 now at 466-3776. Show up at 4 and swing away. And good luck to you. Caller 5 now for the longest drive competition at the Graduate. We'll see you there Friday at 4.
We already got a caller on the line. Just give me a second. I'm getting there. I got to end the show first.
You might have. Yeah, get it done. Elijah, you rock. Thanks. Show will be posted, hailvarsity.com or iTunes. SoundCloud will be up with Pizzo and with Edwards and with Babbers and with Shuey. And we'll talk to you more tomorrow at 4 on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Take care.